Welcome to the IP 360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. This podcast talks about wealth, health, and all the different ways we measure our success. It's a true 360-degree look at what wealth means to you. So it's fitting that today we're talking about families, one of the great wealths in all of our lives. And today's episode is about divorce and children. Let's go to the interview. I'm on today with Dr. Catherine Horvath. She is a registered psychologist with competencies in clinical work with children, adolescents, and families, as well as forensic work with adolescents. She's also the founder of the Ottawa Center for Resilience. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
So, Catherine, can you tell me a little bit about the Ottawa Center for Resilience?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Ottawa Center for Resilience, or OCFR as we call it, is a mental health center where we provide interventions, assessments, consultation, and training for a diverse range of clients with diverse issues. But we have a particular focus on issues related to childhood trauma and dissociation, attachment, adoption, and divorce in high conflict families.
Okay, so kind of the whole gamut of family challenges.
Yeah.
And we want to talk today about divorce, which is a topic that feels like, a really scary one, whether or not it's something you're going through, something you ever pondered. Frankly, I find it's often like the unspeakable topic for a lot of people. Would you say that's also accurate?
Yeah, which is too bad because it's actually fairly common. I don't know what the current divorce stat is in Canada, but it tends to hover between 40-50% of marriages. So it's certainly, not unusual if you're finding yourself in that position.
So one of the typical questions that would sort of start off a conversation around divorce is getting separated or divorced going to harm children, the children of the marriage?
Right. I think that's probably one of the things that people worry about the most, and often why they'll stay longer or sort of, go back and forth about whether or not they should actually make that move to separate. So what we actually know about conflict, marital conflict, conflict between parents and the effect on children is that children being exposed to conflict between their parents in and of itself is not harmful. That's sort of going out to all parents. So it's not realistic in any family that parents don't have disagreements or conflicts from time to time. And that isn't harmful to your children if your children see that you resolve those conflicts. So as long as, sometimes mom and dad disagree, but they work it out and they're okay after.
Right.
No harm done there. If you're in a relationship where the conflict is constant and ongoing and it's not being resolved, that's where we start to see harm being done to kids living in an environment like that. And that's where you want to start thinking, maybe living apart and stopping the conflict will actually, yes, it'll be a big transition for everyone, but it actually would be less harm than we're currently doing to our kids by exposing them to all this fighting all the time.
What if you've been really successful in sort of keeping the conflict out of the house, but instead you've got a lot of silence and, you're very separated from each other? Is that in a sense a form of conflict, or are the children going to pick up on that as well?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And they do. I think there are definitely a lot of couples which think like, oh, the kids don't know. We don't tell them. We keep it to ourselves. Conflict isn't just that kind of loud in your face fighting. It's emotional unavailability. It's tension. There's no warmth. These two people can't be in the room together. They're always stressed out, right?
Yes.
And all that stuff as a parent takes you away from being available for your kids.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a situation and we're thinking this is untenable. We've tried everything we can. And the concept of separation or divorce is now a very real possibility. So how does a couple prepare the children for that that possibility or that process beginning?
Yeah. So ideally, sort of the best case scenario is if the parents are still able to function well enough together as co-parents that they can agree on kind of what they want to tell the kids and that they can tell the kids together. Sometimes it's helpful to work with a mental health professional or someone to help you prepare for that, prepare what's the message we want to give and how are we going to do this. It's when parents don't tell the kids together, that becomes a new source of conflict. And then there's different stories and it starts to polarize everyone. And the kids start to feel like they need to have alliances with each parent and it complicates things. So sometimes you're really in a place where you can't do that. And that's understandable, but your best choice is to tell the kids together. As far as how you tell the kids or what you tell the kids, you do have to obviously consider their age and be age appropriate as far as how much information you're going to give. But really, this is kind of like any tough conversation you're going to have with your kids, whether it's about grandma's dying, the dog's dying, you know, we're moving, someone's lost their job, like all of these situations. I think as adults, we actually are more uptight and uncomfortable with that kind of stuff than kids are. And so we make it all complicated by maybe not using direct or straight language. We'll try and, a classic example is how people will say, when someone's died, instead of just saying like, look, grandma's died, they'll say, oh, grandma's gone somewhere else, or she's passed on. And kids don't get that. And then they spend all this time thinking like, oh, where's grandma? When do I get to go see grandma, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes saving ourselves and not the kids. So it's not that you need to be blunt, but you should be honest and use straightforward language and not give a lot of detail. Like, remember that the details of the divorce and why it's happening is really adult information and part of the adult relationship that the kids should not be exposed to. I'm going to tell you right now, kids are not surprised when their parents are getting divorced. They know things haven't been going well, right?
Right.
So here, an example would be basically saying something like, you know what, you know, your other parent and myself, things haven't been going great for us. We've decided that what's really best for the family is for us to live apart. And we still love you. And we're still going to work together to be your parents, but we can't live together anymore. Or something like that. Like, mm-hmm. And then if kids need to know more, they'll ask more. So it's like you let the kids lead. You give the basic facts and you leave it. And if they want more information, they'll ask. Usually they won't want more information right away because they're going to need time to process it.
Mm-hmm. And when we see examples of this in media, which, let's be honest, most of us don't get to go and watch our friends tell their children they're getting divorced. So what we have to base our experience on is TV and, you know, movies and whatnot. It's, you know, typically it's shown as this very calm, neutral faced, you know, gentle conversation where people are leaning in and all the emotions left to the children. But is that A, realistic, and B, is that necessary? Like, if you're still at the point mm-hmm. where you're gonna cry when you bring it up, is it too soon to talk about it? Is that okay? Is it okay to show emotion?
So it's absolutely okay to show emotion and be human, but it needs to be somewhat controlled emotion. So what I mean is, like, if you're in a place where you're going to be so distraught by having this conversation that you will become emotionally overwhelmed and unable to be present or available for your kids, then that's not a good idea. Right. Because then you've got a situation where there's no room for the kids' own reactions and their emotions and how to process it. But yeah, like, we're not robots. So it's okay that, you know, I don't know, personally, every time I have an emotion that's stronger than like a 3 on a scale to out of 10, I start crying. So like, it's okay. I can relate. Like, it's okay if there's some tears and some emotion. It's just because you're human, and because this is sad, this is a hard thing, and it's not probably what any of you wanted for your family or thought how your family would work out. And that's okay. But you don't want to be in a position where the kids are consoling you, or you're destroyed by the situation.
Right. That totally makes sense. And so I hesitate to use a term with a normal reaction, but what is a pretty typical or expected reaction? Or how do you know if obviously there could be some emotion from your child, but you know, what's sort of the ballpark of, okay, this is about what you should expect, or this is a sign that this child's now in distress?
So most kids don't have much of a reaction in the moment, to be honest. They tend to kind of probably be a bit in shock and need time to process it. Often it's going to come out in more indirect ways, right? Over the sort of days and weeks to come after, you might see them having issues with sleep or some, you know, behavior or focus, or, you know, falling behind in school, for example, or, you know, not, you know, spending a lot of time isolating, let's say, closing themselves in their room, not necessarily wanting to be part of the family or talking or seeing friends. Really the best thing is for, as a parent, is to kind of let them know, like, you know, this is an adult problem and an adult decision, and we're here for you, and we're going to answer all your questions honestly, and it's okay for you to have a whole bunch of mixed up feelings about this, and it's okay if you're mad at us, or, you know, whatever it is that you feel, so that you create an environment where the kids know that they don't need to hide their reactions and their experience.
How can we help our kids cope with that, with the divorce and the adjustment to the parents not living together? So we've kind of gone through the process of telling them, and, you know, now there's going to be a bunch of changes that happen to the household makeup, potentially the living situation, et cetera. So what are some tips around how to sort of make that a transition or a change that is manageable?
Yeah. So, and, you know, this is where parents, you know, there's a continuum of sort of, I guess you could say, how conflictual a divorce is, right? So there are those people who are able to keep things fairly amicable and manage a divorce on their own and not necessarily involve a lot of professional assistance. You know, and then as we move along, there's some people where it's like, you really might benefit from the support of someone who's experienced in divorce, whether a counselor or mental health professional, who can just help you kind of, because the thing is, it's not that your relationship, like your romantic relationship, may be over, but you still have children together and you still have a co-parenting relationship. So it's like, how do you pivot and then figure out how to have that relationship in a way that's going to be healthy for you and your kids? It can be useful to get some help in that department. And then it can kind of move along, you know, I mean, all the way to the end that we have people who, you know, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on their divorces and have lawyers and go all the way to trials in court. Obviously that's not ideal, or that's not great for anybody. I think one of my general counsels or advice is that, if at all possible, stay out of the family court system, because by nature the court system is adversarial. And even though family law lawyers are aware of that, and there's a lot of really good ones, it's sort of, it creates this dynamic where there's a winner or a loser. And then once that becomes the kind of the playing field, you know, none of us wants to be a loser, let's face it, right? And so then it becomes this adversarial competition and making sure you're not going to lose out. Well, as soon as you're in that kind of arena, it's really the kids who are losing out, because you're losing sight of what you need to be doing. So, I mean, that said, some families really need the support of lawyers and so forth to be able to navigate this properly.
And when we're talking about, you know, everything from breaking the news to going through the process of figuring out what the new normal is for your family, when we're talking about the kids, what kind of differences are there between going through this process with kids, say, you know, 9, 10 years old, or kids in their middle teens?
Well, I mean, one of the bigger differences is sort of trying to figure out living arrangements and parent, like residential schedules for kids, where younger children need a lot more hands-on parenting care. And it's not that teenagers don't need parental involvement, but in some way they need less of it. And they're also a lot more peer-oriented. And so, you know, with younger kids, you're going to see that, you know, it may be healthier for them to have a good amount of time between both parents. But with teenagers, you're often going to see that they really don't want to be going between houses, not so much because they're necessarily closer to one parent than the other, but it's a hassle, basically. Like, they want to live in the house that's close to their school and their friends and kind of have a primary residence and maybe, go visit the other parent. So that's one difference, is sort of adapting the way you're going to approach those issues. I think really the concerns are pretty universal across different age groups. It's just that it's going to come out differently in how they express it.
Is there a difference in how the children's peers will react to this news between, you know, a kid who's 9 or a kid who's 15? Could you assume that your teenage kid is going to get more support or a different kind of support, or is it just not like that at all? I mean, I'm kind of asking, like, how do the kids gain support from their peers, or do they?
So my experience is that divorce is fairly normal, basically. And so I'm seeing that, you know, kids right from kindergarten to, you know, young adulthood, like, other kids, like their peers, there isn't a stigma around it. Like, there isn't a negative reaction. There isn't shame around it. It's pretty common to have kids with all kinds of family constitutions and step parents and, you know, same sex parents, et cetera, et cetera. My sense is that kids don't really bat an eye. They kind of take it in stride, and peers are available to talk about that. Like, and they understand, wow, that would be hard not to live with one of your parents or to go back and forth every week, or but they kind of roll with the punches pretty well, I find.
So we talked about little kids and we've talked about teenagers. What about if your children are, you know, I'm going to put quotes around adults. I don't know if my parents ever will think of us as adults, but, you know, college years or even a little bit older, you know, as your children are no longer dependent on you in terms of housing, for example, and like daily care, is there still a conversation you need to have? And is it different? How does that play out?
Well, you absolutely still need to tell them. I don't think it's really that different. I think it's same thing, like factual, straightforward, and leaving the door open if they want to talk about it more. I mean, certainly by young adulthood, you know, they have their own well-developed lives and interests. I mean, it would depend. Well, actually, these days, a lot of young adults are still living at home. So that's a little bit different, in the sense of they might have, you know, questions around like, well, what does this now mean for me? Like, at 20 years old, are you going to expect me to go back and forth between houses? Not really interested in that, right? So I think, you know, around those types of details and things like that, you know, at that age, I mean, they really can kind of decide to do what they want, but maybe, you know, so they should be participants in those types of discussions, right? I mean, if one parent, you know, is keeping the marital home and one is moving out, you know, they might want to know, like, do they need, like, what are the considerations of how many rooms they need to have? Because do they need to have, like, should they be expecting their adult children to be coming back and forth? Those kinds of things. You know, they might have questions around, like, well, who's going to pay for my tuition now? Like, you know, more of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And okay, so kind of going back to children who are still reliant on us for care, you know, obviously parenting schedules are a huge, can be hugely important and a huge point of conflict for couples. So can you give us a little bit of information around how to sort of decide what's best and how to have those discussions? How, like, what point do you, for example, involve or ask the children their opinion or take on something?
Okay, so first of all, I would suggest, to be honest, unless you really feel like you have to, maybe for financial reasons, that you should not create a parenting plan by yourself. There's lots of great professionals who do this all the time, and they understand all the considerations, and they're neutral. And it's, you know, it could, you know, if you're a low conflict couple and you just need some guidance, it could be two or three sessions with a social worker, but it's, well, you know, that's well worth the money, and they're going to help you sort out all the issue. You know, they know what you need to talk about, what pieces you need to cover, so there aren't conflicts later on. So I highly recommend that. I mean, there's lots of resources online that you can reference and look at suggestions for parenting plans if you want to research that. But honestly, I advise against not creating your own parenting plan. The second part of your question was about involving children. So you have to be really careful around this one. This can be one that can really polarize divorces and make them a lot more conflictual. So it continues to be an adult decision, and you shouldn't let the kids' preferences drive the parenting plan. It's okay to look into what the kids' preferences are. Like, so the line that we kind of use in this field when we're doing this is that the children have a voice, but not a choice. And that might sound really harsh, but it's important that adults are making decisions for children, and that we're not letting children become the adults and then make decisions or feel like they're being allowed to make decisions that could be life altering, you know, when they're little kids, and then they're going to have to deal with that later. So the analogy I always use with parents is, like, you know, if your 10-year-old told you, well, I'm not going to school anymore, I'm done, not interested, would you let that fly? Would you be like, oh, great, Johnny, like, that's a good idea. Okay, you know best. I'm pretty sure anyone listening is going to say, like, no, there's no way I would do that. It might be hard, but I know as an adult from my perspective in life that it's in Johnny's best interest to go to school. And it's going to totally change his life if he stops going to school. So I'm not going to let him do that. I'm going to figure out how to make him continue going to school. Mm-hmm. Well, the same applies to your relationship with your other parent. You know, it is all children do best having both their parents in their lives. So you need to know that as the adult, and you need to know that this is something that you need to make sure happens for your kids, even though there will be times where they will not want to see one of the parents.
Mm-hmm. There's times where I have friends who've gone through this, and, you know, the kids, like, for example, they might like story time with dad, but for logistic reasons, staying at dad's on weeknights because it's further from the school, et cetera, will actually result in them having a lower quality of life, more commuting time, or they can't do their after school sports anymore because it's too far. And so just decisions are made on a very logical basis of, you know, for these days you need to be here because it makes more sense. And then you can still go to hockey, et cetera. When you're trying to get through some of those decisions that have to be made, you know, you find that balance between an emotional decision and a common sense logistical decision. Do you explain that to the kids, or do you just say this is how it has to be? At what point are you oversharing to the point where it's just going to get frustrating?
I think that the line is should be something around like, I'm open and I want to hear your frustrations. Like, this is what you would say to your kid. And your other parent and I will take, you know, discuss it and take those into consideration. I get that, you know, there are things that are hard about this situation, but we're all doing our best. And sometimes there are things you're going to like about it. And sometimes there's going to be things that kind of suck about it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we do that in parenting, whether or not you're divorced. Like, there are things that, you know, like, kids have to do.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of our listeners come from households with a high level of means. And so the challenge can be sometimes in that is that through a divorce process, there's a lot of discussion around assets and division of wealth. And of course, that leads to extra conflict beyond maybe what some of us might picture if we aren't in that sort of world. So when you're going through something like that, where there's bound to be, there's regardless of, you know, going to a full trial or anything, there's just bound to be a great deal of discussion and probably some tension around how that division occurs. Mm-hmm. How do you mitigate the fact that there's just almost no way that your children won't pick up on some of that tension?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they're picking up on it or they're asking you or whatever, I mean, you can say like, you know, we're still sorting things out and some of it is it's a stressful process to go through, but it's really important that you both make a commitment to keep your children out of the details of your relationship and your divorce. And, you know, and that's, that includes if you have adult children, like, they're not your peers, they're not your friends, they're not your support network. Those are, it's not their relationship, it's your relationship with your ex. And even if they're 20 or 30, you're still their parents and that they're still your child. So you shouldn't be involving them in those conversations at all. You can let them know like, yeah, you know, divorce can be hard and right now it's a bit tiring or stressful, but that's it, you know, but we're working on it. We have people helping us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You talked about when you're working through your parenting plan or your parenting schedule, for example, talking to, say, a social worker, can you talk a little bit more about what kind of resources, what, you know, for schedule, where would I go and talk to you? People talk a lot about arbitration, for example. Is this that point or is that only when there's conflict? Where do you go for your first step of, you know, we want some help on doing this right from the start?
Yeah, so a mediator would be, you wouldn't start with an arbiter. So a mediator is usually a good option and they can help you sort out the parenting schedule as well. They can also do the financial mediation and sort of, they can cover all the different aspects of decision-making and assets and so forth that you need to sort out. You know, sometimes there are mental health professionals. If you're just trying to sort out the kind of the parenting piece and what's best for the kids, who will help you with those.
Right. And in terms of, you know, if I have some concerns that I'm worried my kid may not be adjusting well to this or may not adjust well, and I'm trying to be proactive, is it wise to, or is it typical to get my child involved with, say, a counselor right from day one? Or should I wait for a certain sign of a need? Like, how do I be proactive enough to be effective, but not so proactive as to sort of imply there's a problem?
Yeah. So what I sort of say to parents around this is overall, kids are resilient. And our goal is that kids, we should kind of get out of the way and let kids live their life as in as normative a way as possible. And if we don't need to get specialists involved, then we shouldn't be doing that. And so what you're kind of going to want to do, so, I mean, kids can navigate a lot of bumps in the road pretty and bounce back and be pretty healthy. So you're going to look, I don't think you need to proactively get someone involved. you could offer that. Like if you have kids that are old, like, would you like to have someone you can talk to about stuff that's happening in our family and changing in our family, that's private, that's just for you. And you can talk about anything you want. And some kids might like that. And then that's fine. But I wouldn't do it unless a kid's expressing an interest. Or then the other things you want to look for is the kid showing, like, is it impacting the kid's functioning in their day-to-day life more than it should be, in a sense of, like, you know, this kid is now not functioning at school, they're not doing their homework, they're not, you know, they're not showing up for soccer practice, they're not playing with friends. If they're younger kids, when they're playing with friends, all they do, their play is all about the divorce, and kids don't really want to play with them anymore because they're kind of like stuck on this topic. So sort of like, or nightmares, or, you know, so a little bit of distress is expected. They should be, you know, distressed, but it should sort of pass. You know, they should work through it and they should move on. And I mean, not to say that they won't ever be upset at different points in time. Like, this is a process. It's not an event. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there will be different developmental periods, different milestones where kids will grieve the divorce again, because it's really a grief process because there's a loss. So, you know, when they want to go to overnight camp and they have to deal with missing a week with one of their parents because it's that parent's week, that could be upset, right? Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of, you know, when you grow up and it's time to get married and you got to deal with your divorced parents coming to your wedding, and like, there's lots of points at which it's going to resurface, and that's fine. So I think, just to recap, the kind of the indicators for getting professional help involved would be significant distress or impairment, basically.
Right. And it would be fine for a parent to reach out and potentially talk to someone first, just one-on-one, and say, listen, this is what I'm seeing. And, you know, the thing is, nobody gets a manual when you get a baby, right? So
yeah,
sometimes it's a little unclear what's a normal level of distress and what's gone on a little too long or a little too intensely.
Yeah, I think you just want to be cautious that you don't want to send, like, so it's always good to consult. And often it's more helpful for parents to get their own support, and then for that to kind of be in the background. And then the parents are the support to the kids instead of the kids being taken to someone.
Right.
Because you don't want to give the kids the message that there's something wrong with their feelings. So it's like, oh, you're upset about the divorce. Wow, you need to go see a psychologist. Like, it's kind of like, oh, am I not supposed to be upset about the divorce? Like, right?
Exactly. Great. Well, I think we've covered the basics. I'm looking forward to some future conversations with you again about this. Can you please tell us where people can go to learn more about the Ottawa Centre for Resilience?
Sure. They can go to our website, which is just ocfr.ca. And that's probably the simplest way to do that.
Perfect. Dr. Catherine Horvath, thank you again for joining us. Looking forward to another chat in the near future, taking this topic a little bit further. And thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IP360 podcast. We'll have more lifestyle experts joining us soon. If you'd like to reach out to us here, you can email us at comms@ipprivatewealth.com or head to ipprivatewealth.com for more information on the IP360 philosophy to wealth management. See you next time. And now for the fine print. The opinions and statements expressed by our team and guests are effective as of the date of this broadcast and may be subject to change.